Morning, Dennis.
Morning, Aaron.
How are we doing?
We're good, thank you.
All right. And you're excited about the election campaign?
Well, I don't know if I'm excited about it.
Yeah, sorry, that's a kind of a silly question. It's coming up. Yeah, it's coming up. So just tell us why you decided to run again.
I guess...
Because we should say, for people who don't know, Dennis is the current deputy chair of the community board and has been on the board for just this term, 3 years.
Yeah, I guess for me the last 3 years has been quite interesting. You know, I haven't been in local body politics in the past and that sort of thing, and I was sort of looking for something that I could give back to the community. And while at times it gets a little frustrating, there have been some things that we've been able to get our teeth into and work forward with and from a project point of view and things like that, which is where really my interest is in trying to develop some of those sort of things for Ragland.
Okay. So let's go back a bit then now and just tell us a little bit about your history, like you've got family, what career you've had over the years and that sort of thing, just so people kind of get to know you a bit.
Yeah, well, born in Hamilton, but grew up in Ragland.
Yeah.
Because that's where my father was working in post-war years and that sort of thing. Went to primary school in Ragland, did my secondary school in Hamilton, actually, at Fairfield College. And then went on into the trades in the electrical area and did an apprenticeship in electrical fitting and in hydropower generation and also in instrumentation and control in the same field, and basically spent 50 years working in power generation, refurbishment, new builds and things like that, both in New Zealand and offshore.
Were you working for the government or were you working privately?
First 20-odd years was with the government,
yeah,
and on some of the Think Big projects, such as New Plymouth Power Station, Stratford, Whirinaki, Huntly.
Right, so you're a small cog on a big machine in those days?
Well, I did reasonably well. So at Huntly, I was in charge of the commissioning team, doing all the final commissioning at Huntly,
okay,
and things like that. And then corporatisation came along, and a few of us got out and set up another division within Electrics. We were just a general electrical contracting company at the time, contracting back to the government and power generation. So I spent the last 25 years basically with Electrics and with Alstom, basically contracting back to the government or doing new build power stations.
So this was were you a partner of owning a company? Was that?
No, I was actually employed by the company.
Yeah,
wasn't a partner of it.
Okay, all right. I couldn't quite remember what that was all happening there. So you're just focused on the job?
Yeah, more or less focused on the job and the team working for us and that sort of thing.
Yeah, okay, all right. And but you've lived in this area the whole time?
Yeah, predominantly lived here. Like I said, grew up, spent the first 18-odd years in Ragland. Then when we got married, moved away to New Plymouth for 3 or 4 years and Huntly and Hamilton for a year, and then brought a block of land out at Tijuca and spent the next 40 years out there before we sort of retired and moved right into Ragland.
Okay. Do you feel like you know the rural community?
Yeah, I've got having lived 40 years in Tijuca, or in between Tijuca and Waitatuna, been involved with the Board of Trustees at Waitatuna School.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, yeah, I've got a pretty good understanding of some of the challenges faced by people living out in the rural areas and some of the services that, you know, we don't get that you do get in town and having to manage those and that sort of thing, yep.
Yeah, and that's a relevant question this time around because we have expanded the community board boundary out past, presumably past where you used to live.
Yeah, it goes basically to that, or more or less to the turn off at Waitatuna Road, where Waitatuna Road joins State Highway 23, it sort of stops about there, roughly.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the going out to Te Mata ART, it goes an awful long way out that way.
Yeah, that was this is the issue of mesh blocks. I don't want to get into the details about how mesh blocks work now, but they limits where you can put your boundaries. I've tried to explain them in the past. And were you involved with the surf club?
Yeah, I was involved with the surf club for a long time. Still am. They dragged me back onto the board this year. Basically because we lost the tower and we're looking to do an extension to the club rooms.
Well, you've still got the tower somewhere in pieces, I presume.
No, the tower is actually on Pohakna Marae. Given to them in conjunction with the council. We gave it to them to utilise, that sort of thing, because it wasn't really in a position where we could put it back down on the beach anywhere, so it was better off to sort of give it to a home that could use it.
Yes.
And that sort of thing. So it was donated to them. Council removed it for us and we donated it to them.
And I presume the spot, there's now seawater rushing through the spot where it was?
No, it probably could still be there just. Actually, she I was would talking, be on the edge of a precipice.
Yeah, I was talking to Shaw Mead last week, and he was saying that the sand has come back a little bit at that end, when it's really hollowed out round where Elephant Rock is, which looks more like a mountain at the moment.
Yeah.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, it's just that 50-year cycle that we seem to see on the beach where it comes and goes.
Yeah.
You know, around Elephant Rock, it's not as bad as it was 25, 30 years ago when we had the old surf club at the harbour entrance, and we actually couldn't drive the quads down the beach because it was just all rocks.
Is that right? Is that why it was shifted?
Well, it wasn't really why it was shifted, but it sort of gave it a bit of a nudge to get it moving, because when Wainua Reserve was being developed, Michael Hope, who sort of drove that, who was our regional, or our councillor for this area at the time, he drove that, but in conjunction with Bill Kennedy, they identified that we needed to relocate down there at some point in time.
Well, that is where the actual beach is that people go swimming, isn't it?
So. That's right. So that's why it was sort of, in the original Wainua Reserve plan, there was an identification for a building for the Surf Life Saving Club. It wasn't actually in the location it is now. It was actually up on the hill, higher behind where the club rooms were. But it was felt that, you know, moving it down closer was a lot easier, quicker to respond and things like that.
Yeah, and especially now the surf tower's not there.
Yeah.
Like, is that where the guards are now, like keeping a look? Where do they keep a lookout at the moment?
Yeah, they
where will they when summer comes?
Well, last summer we didn't have a tower, so last summer they were on the, they had a portable tower on the beach, but they also had a lookout under a marquee up on the terrace of the club rooms.
Okay, all right. Well, that's... Yeah, it's life at the beach. Life at the beach. But yeah, no, but it's good to see. I guess some of why I talk about those things is then to tie in like what, the skills you've developed in your working life and your private life that relate to being on the community board.
Yep.
So presumably running projects. In fact, I know that you have experience at running projects, and I know from talking to you, you're a little frustrated at how hard it is to do that working with council. But do you feel like you've achieved some things?
I think we, if we look back and be honest, yeah, we have achieved some things, and hopefully we've made a few projects like the footpath that went along Papahua. You know, being able, prior to the footpath being put in, actually being able to liaise with the Ringan Sports Fishing Club and with the soccer guys about where it's going to go and is that going to impact on them or what do they need council to consider. I think with a bit of luck, I think that may have gone smoother and that sort of thing. We've also got Places for People project going, even though that money came from outside.
So Places for People, just to remind people, that's the parklets downtown?
Yeah, the two parklets in town. You know, we went through the consultation phase and that sort of thing. And then we got them, managed to get them erected and installed and, you know, got very positive feedback back on them. And they seem to now being quite successfully being used on fine days. There's still a challenge when it's raining, obviously.
But
on fine days, and hopefully over the summer they'll get a lot more use. Last summer was a bit impacted by COVID and different things. This hopefully over the summer they'll get a lot more use.
And you've been involved with what's happening at the wharf?
Yeah, and then there's been the wharf project, getting that up and running.
And were you responsible for the big signboards that were up in a few places around town?
Well, they were sort of working with council and with the consultants, Becca, that we had involved, just to try and get that publicity for both local people and visitors, was to sort of do some bigger signage so that people can sort of, instead of sort of saying what's going on here, they can actually stop and read a signboard and get a bit of information on the project. It's a bit like they've done out at the wharf with, you know, the signage that they've put up down there so that people can understand what's going on.
Do you feel that's been successful?
Well, I think even if only half a dozen people read it, it's got to be successful. They're trying to keep people more informed.
Yeah, and I think they will go away and talk to other people. Or if they hear someone banging on about something they don't know what they're talking about, they might correct them. So that's how I live and hope for what I do here. So
It's always difficult trying to get the message out to the greater community, particularly, you know, a lot of us aren't on Facebook, we don't worry about it, and that sort of thing. So, you know, then it's how do you get the message out to everyone else? And, you know, from the community board's point of view, we've tried to use the Chronicle and the signage around town, hopefully sort of gets that message out to that wider group.
Yeah. Now, because of increases in the construction industry, we can't do what was called the Western Walkway down at the wharf. Do you hope that will get done?
Yeah, I'm positive it'll get done.
Where will the money come from for it?
Well, at the moment, the aim would be if you know, we have made an application to the Better Off funding, but we're not that confident we'll get a lot of money out of that because the amount of money needed would be too big a chunk for them to take out of the Better Off funding. So I think that's probably going to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
But if we can we need to make sure we get it into the LT plan for the next 12 months. And then we need to look at where funding can be come from. If we look back over the last 3 years, there's been quite a lot of government funding that just pops up.
Yeah.
And by having a project that's basically what they say now, shovel ready and ready to go, then we've got a project and we can just say, right, this project can start tomorrow if you're happy for us or if it fits within the funding requirements.
There seems to be something they're keen on. It's got to be shovel ready.
Yeah.
They don't want you coming up with new ideas.
Yeah, no, that's right. So
for whatever, reason.
Yeah. So hopefully it's in that position and we can make it go. But I'm confident in the next 3 to 5 years it'll definitely get done.
Yeah, yeah. So after Bob McLeod passed a year and a few weeks now,
yep.
You eventually were appointed in his place as deputy chair. So for the coming term, Gabriel Parsons stepping down, there's a vacancy for a community board chairperson. Would you be interested in that?
Well, I'm more interested in sort of taking projects and taking things and trying to move them forward.
Yeah.
Rather than, I guess I see the chair's role more being a political role, trying to smooth things along and sort of take all those queries from everyone that wants to,
yeah.
that's got queries and things like that. So, you know, depending on who else wants to stand, I wouldn't say I would say no, but, you know, there are guys like Tony Houston who are more than competent at filling that role and things like that.
Somebody might have to have their arm twisted in this circumstance. I haven't talked to Tony yet. I'll have to ask him the same question. I'll say he's been designated and see what he says. So we've talked about that and that. Let's get into some kind of bigger handy-wavy kind of things. I often talk about this, like, we think we're unique out here in Raglan. We're sort of a different place with our own strong identity. And people don't like it to change. I often think if we want things to stay the same, we need to actually understand what it is that we've got that we want to keep. Are you, having talked to lots of people now over the last 3 years, what do you think it is that we're trying to hang on to?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because, you know, I can go back and say, well, you know, in winter time when I was a 12-year-old kid and we want to go and play in the main street, we could ride a go-karts down the main street. There was no one in the middle of winter.
It'd be fun to watch out here, actually.
It was fantastic. And, you know, I've had a lot of people say to me, hey, it was Raglan was a lot nicer place back in those days. And I'd have to probably agree to a certain extent, but the reality is we can't keep our head in the sand. You know, the world population is growing exponentially. And we need to look at, you know, how do we sort of keep that country vibe or that laid-back atmosphere in the town while we still grow the town?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the things that frustrates me a little bit is that everything that I've seen done in the last 3 years is pretty ad hoc.
Yes.
That was one of the reasons I was pretty aggressive at times on the Whangarei Harbour study that I didn't want it to grow so wide that it becomes just another study. It needed to be retained and kept to the brief that we basically had, which was about connectivity around the harbour and mobility around the harbour, and just focus on that, not get into shellfish beds and all sorts of other things. And then come up with some actions within that plan that were actually something that were achievable. And whilst I don't think we quite got it right, we certainly have got some very good actions in that plan. And so, I think, you know, when you look at the whole of Raglan, we need to, and I know others have talked about a structure plan and things like this, but we need to sort of have something like that to say, right, our vision for Raglan in 25 years' time is this, and have a plan about where are we going to have our soccer fields, where are we going to expand with a hockey field, you know, with a grass surface and all these sorts of things going forward, rather than just have a developer come along and do what he wants to do and say, well, we might put a swimming pool up here, but we're not going to really communicate. And just do what the developers want to do and follow the flow.
And developers will always be doing that, and it's a matter of, the community knowing what it wants beforehand, I guess.
Yeah, it's a matter of the community saying, hey, this is what we would like, this is what we'd like to see, and then sort of looking at where can you buy a bit of land to do that, which stage, how big does the community have to be before you'd actually start to initiate that and make it happen.
I guess Raglan has developed in an ad hoc way, and that's part of its charm. But that's an ad hoc way where a house was built there, and then 10 years later, the one next door was built, and another 10 years down the road, it was built, and it was all different styles of houses and infill, and that was has its own charm. Like that's part of what's unique about Raglan. But now, I think we're into an era where the development is a lot faster, and there's a lot more intense.
Oh, without a doubt.
And most of the infill's been done now, so yeah.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt, things have escalated when you look at the smaller subdivisions out Lawrence's Bay and out on the main road, just on the main road, or Robinson Road, things like that, and then Rangitahi, and then, there's other subdivisions and plans in place for other areas as well. So yeah, the development's just taken off without a lot of sort of consideration of what other services do we need for a population. Well, for double the population that we've presently got, basically, which is what we're going to have probably in another 10 years' time.
Yeah, well, what's that? One of the council's predictions is that they've got a report saying 12,000 people in 50 years' time.
Yeah, which seems a bit far away to me.
It seems like a big number, but it does kind of help to have that out there.
Yep.
To say when we're planning something for 10 years' time, are we in 10 years going to have to be redoing it anyway? Our plan will change.
Yeah.
But does council think that far ahead? Is it structured to think that far ahead?
Well, I think it does have a 25-year plan and this sort of thing, but it's a matter of how much input of that input into that plan comes from the community as to comes from planners within council.
Yeah.
So it's really up to people in Raglan to sort of take the initiative and lead those sorts of things for its own community.
Yeah.
You could argue that they did that a little bit with Raglan naturally, but it's a great big – well, it's not a great big document, but it's a document – with a whole lot of great ideas in it, but no real plan about how those initiatives would be actioned going forward and at what time frame.
Yeah, it's kind of an aspirational document, whereas you're talking about lines on a plan, lines on a map, saying this will go here.
Something a bit more tangible, I guess you could say that.
Yeah, and that can come from Raglan. It can come from Raglan, naturally.
Oh, for sure, Yeah.
I know, like Axel Beck, the deputy mayor, who was heavily involved with the blueprints, he was saying the blueprints are kind of that. That's part of what he thought that they were about, was to have some idea of what the community wanted beforehand. To have some idea of what the community wanted before a developer turned up wanting to develop some part of the area. And so you could say, well, this is what we need now at this stage. Do you think the blueprints are working like that or going to work like that?
My experience from what I've seen in the blueprints is no, they're not working like that at the moment because they haven't got the detail in them.
Right.
And I think that's what we need to say. We need to say that in 2030 we need an area where there's X number of soccer fields able to be fitted. We need a town community building for youth and seeing sorts of things and say we need those in those days. Then if a developer comes along and says I want to develop 100 hectares, well, we can say, yep, okay, but we need to consider this and we need to consider this within that development.
Something that Axel Beck said to me actually yesterday was that in the old days before the Resource Management Act, there was the Town and Country Act or something? And every time someone wanted to develop somewhere, they had to take into account that schools were needed and parks were needed and things like that. And that kind of disappeared in the current legislation. Can councils put that stuff back in?
Well, I don't know how that side of it works, but I would think that if a council wanted that into a council, when a subdivision plan is being presented in the early stages, I'm sure they can have a lot of influence on what the community wants within that plan as well before they approve it, because if they don't approve it, then the development doesn't go ahead. So they've got a fair bit of leverage at that point in time, I think.
I guess it not so much doesn't go ahead as it probably goes to the Environment Court or something like that.
Yeah, but
we've seen
council could offer to buy 5 hectares, for example, off that block that's flat and suitable for developing a park or a community centre or whatever it might be.
I've heard a rumour that in return, and I've got no idea whether this is true or whether I should even be saying it on the radio, but in return for providing some land for the land-based sewage treatment, that a particular land company might get a bypass road coming through where they want it to go through, around the back, or maybe arriving up at Extreme Waste, somewhere around there, I don't know. Do you know about anything going on in that?
No, but like you, I've just heard rumours. and that sort of thing.
But that is, if that's actually happening, then that underlines exactly what you're saying, doesn't it?
That's right. You know, that's where, you know, these things are going on in the background that shouldn't be going on in the background. The public should be consulted.
Yeah. And if it's happening, I'm not condemning a developer for doing it. Like, they're doing what they've got to do to get something to happen. Like, someone has to make a decision. But at the moment, the only people wanting to make the decisions are the developers.
Yeah, yeah. And for some reason, the planners are going along with it. So you've got to ask what goes on if that sort of thing is happening.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like council's just kind of wired to enable developers in a way. That's, yeah. I can't explain it any other way.
Yeah, no, it's I find it quite frustrating with what's happening and the fact that, you know, we're struggling to find a location for a soccer field. And when I talk to the planners about it, they sort of say, well, if you're going to identify some land, you can go ahead, you know, we'll buy it. But the onus is back on the community to go and sort it out, which I don't have a problem with, but it's just be one of the things going forward. We just need to understand how council works a little bit better on that type of thing.
Yeah, the Bob McLeod, who you went to school with Bob, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, we were in primary school together.
Yeah, yeah. So because I talked to you after his passing, he was always on about trying to get a structure plan.
Yeah,
he was always trying to get that to happen. And I mean, are you of the same mind? That's what you want to see happen?
Well, I think that's what we've got to look to happen. So we're taking the sort of the community then takes the initiative, and this is what we want.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what we need to look at going forward with a new community board, is to start to drive something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That the other thing that Bob was always very keen on was devolving powers to the community boards. I haven't met anyone on the community board who's against that yet.
Yeah, no, that's been interesting in the last 3 years, because I guess the existing community board were keen on that, without any doubt. I guess it comes back to the skills you've got, whether on how much power you want to divest to the community board, and then what skills you've got on your community board to actually do that.
Yeah.
And then how do they do that? Do the community board employ a project manager to run some things on its behalf?
I think they'd have to.
Or something like that, because, yeah, I think they would too. I don't believe majority of your community board have got full-time jobs. For a start, so they're not in a position to go and run other projects.
And you don't know from term to term what skills you're going to have.
No, no. Yeah. So there's a lot of risk in doing that, but I believe more power in the decision-making part of the process should sit with the community board, and maybe the council then, a bit like the Wharf project, I guess, where with the community and the community board have had a lot of say into that project. Council's running the project, but it's using a project manager to run it, who is still liaising with the projects control group that we set up for that project.
Okay.
On various things. Like recently he's come back with a balustrade design and said, is everyone happy in principle with that? And things like that. So we've still got reasonable amount of input into how that project's being implemented.
Right, yeah. And that's relatively new.
Yeah.
I was trying to think. I had a question. We'll go to this one. So that you've got involved with community consultation. How have you found that?
Well, for someone like me, I guess, who's sort of more at the sharper end of a project where, you know, most of the consultation's been done. We're given a project to build, be it a power station.
This is your working life.
Yeah, and the working life and things like that. Yeah. So to go through 12 or 18 months of consultation backwards and forwards and that sort of thing, yeah, it's been quite challenging, to be honest.
Yeah, you want to get on and get spades in the ground.
Particularly I don't know whether Raglan's different to any other community, but I just find there's a small number of negative people that seem to have a fair bit of sway.
Yeah.
And I find that quite frustrating, in that it wastes an awful lot of people's time.
Yeah,
and in the end of the day, it doesn't achieve anything, because the majority sort of aren't interested in that side, but it has to be managed.
There's a lot of people have experiences where they ask for something from council and then it just kind of it gets forgotten about. And then I see other people who come in, they'll come into the community board meeting and with basically what I would describe as abusive behaviour toward council and staff, but they get what they want.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I see that as a massive problem, because that reinforces... It reinforces the staff feeling frightened of coming out to the community, and it reinforces that the council isn't responsive, and that the only way to do it is to go in and be horrible to people, which is a bit of a thing we have in our culture anyway. I know the community board's not the place to sort that out. That's more like for the mayor or the CEO to do, but find a way of consulting. I'd love to see that resolved.
Yeah, and it is. It does get a bit frustrating, but and, you know, you do see that in that half an hour free forum sometimes before community board, where someone's just got a wants to beat up on somebody on something,
yeah.
And you just waste 5 minutes and it really doesn't achieve anything. You know, I think we need to have consultation and we need to listen to people's grievances. But at the end of the day, some things just need to happen. And I guess the 5G tower that's going up here, you know, some people are not happy about that for whatever reason. But at the end of the day, it's outside council's control. There's government legislation allows them to build things like that, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
So you can beat up on the council, you can beat up on your community board, but all you're doing is probably pissing people off, excuse the language, but... and really, you know, you're not doing yourself any service either, because then, you know, next time you turn up at community board, everyone looks at you and says, oh, you again type of thing.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you need to be a little bit, people need to be a little bit open-minded. Yeah, if you've got a grievance, maybe raise it directly with the community board, like I've said sometimes to people, that if you've got a problem, something's not working, ring us up and we'll see what can be done about it.
See, that is not a call I'll be taking just yet. I have to be honest, my experience with the soccer for 10 years, been trying to get stuff done at those fields, was I was, like, I'm like here I am talking to people on the community board regularly, so I have, like, the ear of the yeah. community board,
yep.
And I've always been quite polite, and was very slow to no progress for 10 years. You've certainly been helpful lately, but I have a feeling if I'd got 10 soccer parents to come in and shout at the community board, I probably would have got better results. That's what I see as quite a major problem.
Yeah, and where it's a justifiable thing, the community board or council need to action it. It's, you know, the soccer field's a pretty frustrating one because it does get wet over there and things like that. But, you know, council's also been at fault because the drainage hasn't been working properly.
When the drainage works, it's actually drier than the fields in Hamilton.
Yeah.
That's what we've discovered, yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks it's a perennially flooded place, but it's not.
No.
Yeah.
So, you know, now that that's all been hopefully sorted out and draining away properly, hopefully we won't have the same problems next year. But I think with things like that, yeah, it's you can't just ignore them. They don't go away.
yeah, that's right. So, that's what we found.
Yeah, so, you know, the community board does need to stand up. We need to rattle a few cages and people in council. And one of the things I've found, I have developed a reasonably good relationship with a few individuals, particularly on that parks and grounds side of things,
yeah.
where I can ring them up and talk about a problem,
yeah.
And they'll pick it up and get it sorted for us. And I think that's what we've got to do as part of our role within the community board is actually develop those relationships within council so that we know who we can ring directly and talk to them and say, hey, this is a problem. You know, the service request that we've put in is probably not going to, or ask someone to put in is not going to be probably clear enough to explain what the real problem is.
Yeah.
But as a member of the community board, if we ring up and talk to Caleb or whoever, then we can talk about the problem, talk about a solution and sort of when it might happen, and then give feedback to whoever's put in the service request or whoever's raised the matter with us.
Yeah, yeah. Just before we go, we've got a Coastal Reserve stakeholders meeting. It's tomorrow night.
Yep, tomorrow night, yep.
Is that 7 o'clock at the Surf Club?
Yes, it is 7 o'clock.
Checking your memory.
No, I was just trying to think whether it's 7 or 7.30. Yeah, it's 7 o'clock at the Surf Club.
And they're going to be some serious community consultation because there's probably quite a few people who want to have a big say about things there. Do you have...
Yeah, well...
Potentially. It's hard to know, actually.
No, it is. But I won't say we're trying to diffuse things, but the aim is to give the stakeholders an opportunity. But we have asked Caleb Ahud and Rebecca... To attend, Caleb, to give us a bit of an overview.
These are council
staff.
Yeah.
Overview on what maintenance work's been done the last 12 months on the three reserves, what's planned over the next 12 months, and also Rebecca to give us some idea what the strategy is going forward for each of the reserves as far as development's concerned and things like that. So hopefully that will answer questions for people. There will also be other people. There will no doubt be people there from different stakeholder groups that have got something they want to raise with us, and we'll be giving everyone sort of the opportunity to have three or four, depending on numbers there and who numbers want to attend, 3 or 4 minutes to, you know, express their aspirations or what they would like to see happen.
Okay. All right. Folks, we've been talking to Dennis Amor, Community Board candidate, current member and Deputy Chair. Thank you for coming in and good luck with the campaign.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate that.
All right, folks, we're going to have a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Robs with our Nature Connection segment.